to the sixth episode of the Rule Breakers and Risk Takers podcast, where we talk all things travel and lifestyle, breaking rules and taking risks and having a ball. It's Maggie here today, flying solo. Cherie's off in Europe having a ball for 9 weeks, I think it is. I recently took a little solo trip to New Zealand just for 9 days. And while I was there, I was lucky enough to interview over the phone Julie from A Not So Young Woman Abroad. That was really exciting for me. I know Cherie is super jealous that she couldn't be on the call with us, but it was great to be able to do that while I was away and now bring you this episode. So please sit back, relax, and enjoy and learn some great tips and advice from someone who knows a lot about travel and especially solo female travel. So stay tuned. Welcome, Julie, to Rule Breakers and Risk Takers, and thank you for being with us. It's so exciting. I know that Cherie is really jealous that I'm getting to interview you. And mind you, she's spending 9 weeks in Europe, so jealousy is a relative term.
We're jealous of her.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, shut your mouth and keep traveling, lady. Well, I'll jump straight into it. I'm sure probably most people listening know who you are from your blog, A Not So Young Woman Abroad. But for those who haven't already followed your blog or follow you on Facebook, tell us a little bit about what led you to starting that blog and what it's all about, if you would.
Yeah, so I was hitting the streets of Paris and thinking, you know, I wish I'd had more information about, you know, the places I go for people that are a bit older. So, you know, every time I've been anywhere, I try to research and look up, you know, off the beaten path kind of places that you can go as a solo female. And I just couldn't find much information for people who were a little bit older, mm-hmm. or not so young, as I like to say.
Yeah.
And so I'm walking down the streets of Paris, and I'd previously written a book, and I love to write. You know, in my career, you know, done lots of writing, policy, and tenders and stuff. And mm-hmm. and then I popped on the train to Rome, and it was just before Bastille Day. So I thought, you know, I've got to get out of France for Bastille Day, because it's going to be, you don't know what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm in Rome in the train station, and, you know, this guy tried to swipe my credit card information. He was coming up close with his phone. So I'm thinking, okay, there's all this stuff that nobody has addressed, mm-hmm. and I can't find the information. So, you know, how can other people find it? So that kind of led me to setting up a little business with some, you know, travel handbags, mm-hmm. with RFID blocking,
yeah.
which also then led to the blog as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. Okay. So it was really just like you saw a need that wasn't being met and you were already a writer. You were already written.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So I know recently you posted on your Facebook status that you'd reached a milestone for your followers. And it was massive. I can't remember what the number was, though, off the top of my head, that your community had got to, like, some crazy amount of people. Obviously, needless to say, it's really popular. So my question, I guess, is what do you think – it probably sounds obvious, but what have you – I know that you've said to me before – it's not just people of your specific demographic that follow it. So I was going to say, what do you think appeals to people? Well, obviously the things that you were saying you were missing out on that you couldn't find is what appeals to people of your demographic. But it's more than just people of your age or just females or even just solo travellers that like to follow what you're doing. So do you have an idea of what draws people to your blog?
Yeah, it's a bit perplexed because it really took off really quickly, and now it's got over 35,000 followers across social media and the blog and RSS. You know that RSS thing.
Yeah.
and it seriously blew me away. But what I also realised is that when I'm looking at the stats and behind it and stuff, that I have a really high engagement rate, and I think because people, one, relate to people going out and doing things on their own,
yeah.
and two, because we've actually created a really strong community, and the girls and guys on there will get on and comment, and they'll message me, and we kind of have chat. So it's become this community more than anything. And I think, I think even some of the older people that are on there will say, look, we live vicariously through you, through your experiences. But I think it's become an experience for people.
Yeah.
So they actually feel connected to what I'm doing.
Yeah, I think I'd have to agree. And from a lot of research I've done as well, and a lot of other blogs that I follow, those who are doing it right and doing really well are the ones that are really engaged. You can't just be this vague, like, you know, Insta-famous person who's not a real human, I think, to really engage with people. Mind you, if you're a Kardashian, sure, absolutely. But, you know, but yeah, everybody who's doing it right.
I wasn't willing to put out a
Yeah. Well, look, if you want 2 million followers overnight, sure, but at what price? That's it. Exactly. And it's like, I follow a few, and podcasts as well, you know, and the ones who I really relate to are definitely people who are actually engaged, and you feel like, oh, this is a real human on the other end of this, you know, on the other keyboard. Who's replying to this. And, you know, yeah, I definitely think that makes a difference. And with travel these days, I guess, because the internet is so saturated, that's what's going to make people stand out, I guess, you know, is do you relate to them on a personal level? Because someone just typing on a keyboard somewhere about things that you may not have ever even do isn't really relatable, you know. Getting to the travel side more, I guess, as well, like from your point of view, when you said you were looking for stuff that wasn't really aimed at your age group, and I'm not going to use the word old because that's totally relative, and I think everyone once they're past their 20s feels old, you know, it's relative completely. But what do you think? Do you think there's a lot of women like your age, but also my age, like in my 30s, and then people in their 40s, and then people a lot older, tend to not travel alone? Why do you think that is? I mean, I know I've got my reasons for like being, I still do it, but it still freaks me out. Why do you think people don't? And then do you think maybe that your blog is sort of giving people that courage, or is it just them reading about it and then never going and do it themselves? What do you think?
I think people, older women, and people in particular, I don't think they've known that they did it while they were young. And we tend to get streamed into, you know, the stuff that's out there is if you're older, you go on a cruise or you do a guided tour or you do this and you don't, and it's not, and they don't tend to think of going solo because that then often costs them more money.
Yeah.
And they don't then think, I could actually organise this myself and, you know, it only costs half the price. Mm-hmm. I could get to do things that I want to do and stuff like that. I also think there's a lot more people out there who are not so young or older who are actually going out on their own, but we just don't hear about it.
Yeah.
So I don't know whether I think there's a perception that they're not travelling on their own, and there could, for some, it could be that they're frightened in this world where, you know, anything can happen.
Yeah.
But I think it's more that there's more people out there doing it. But unlike the millennials, we don't hear about it as much.
Mm. That's a really good point.
I know there's a lot out there.
See, that's really funny you say that. Like I met a lot of those kind of people, and when I say those kind of people, I mean old, you know, a generation above me and then a generation beyond that even. When I was in, I went last year to a Horizons Unlimited meeting. I don't know if you know what that is. It's like an overlanders travel group. It's mostly aimed at motorcycle travelers, and I'd just gotten my motorcycle license. And also like four-wheel driving and that kind of thing, but it's really targeted at the motorcycling community. And that's a totally different demographic of people. Like the majority of people there would have been over 50, and they're world travelers. And some of these people have, you know, spent years traveling around the world.
at different points in their life, or were still doing it. And they're just not the ones with blogs or Instagram feeds that you can follow, most of them. Yeah. So, yeah, you're true. And they're not very, so they're not vocal or visible in the way that millennials are, I guess, you know.
Yeah, well, they, yeah, but there's also people that will say, you know, you're really very brave. Julie, like you take risks and stuff, and you know, in some ways, you kind of are when you're traveling on your own,
yeah.
Particularly as a woman.
Yeah,
like you know, I was reading somewhere, and it was quite funny that you know, some young travel bloggers going, oh, you know, it must be cool because you know, the men don't harass you when you're on. It's like, oh, you reckon?
Thanks a lot. Yeah,
they just are a little bit older, the guys, but they still do, you know, like,
yeah.
Yeah, so...
that's so funny.
It comes with some funny stories then.
Yes. Yeah, which we have relayed that in our blog article with you as well about one particularly amorous guy when you were travelling who gave you a really very lovely but somewhat unwanted proposal to come back with him for... It's still kind of nice, though. I mean, I know definitely I notice it. Mind you, I'm probably like 30 kilos heavier and 15 years older than I used to be when I was first out traveling. I'm like, doesn't happen so much anymore. But I'm also probably not hanging around in the kind of places where that does happen all the time. So, and I wouldn't want to be. So what do you love about traveling by yourself? Is most of your travel alone these days? And what do you love that? Would you trade it for anything else? Would you trade it for traveling with other people?
I actually have a partner.
Yeah.
And I leave him behind.
Me too.
I don't think I'd like to travel all the time by myself, but I you know, occasionally it'd be nice to go with someone else, but more that if I could not hang around them all the time, if we could kind of meet up at night somewhere and have dinner or, and kind of catch up with what was gone on during the day.
Yeah.
The beauty of travelling on my own is I'm my own boss.
Yeah.
Like, I'm usually my own boss anyway, but I'm my own boss in terms of I can say, hey, yeah, no, I'm going to do that, or you know what, I'm just going to sit here and watch the world go by, or you know, and I don't have anyone telling me I snore, you know, and I'm not waiting for someone to get ready. I can just get up early in the morning and do what I want to do. So
yeah.
I actually prefer to travel on my own, and. Also, if I waited for other people to get their acts together, I don't think I'd ever be going anywhere.
I'm so exactly the same, and that's the only reason that I was, the very first time I travelled alone was in South America, because other people couldn't get their shit together, and it wasn't meant to be. Like, I actually ended up going with like an acquaintance friend of mine who, and the two other people who were meant to come bailed out. And then it turned out this person was completely incompatible for traveling with me. And so we split up after a couple of days. And that took, like, that was really scary to be like, I am in a country where not only do I not speak the language, when I try, they still don't understand me because my Spanish is so bad. But, like, I tried really hard. I hate being one of those travelers that refuses to even try to say please and thank you and order your dinner in the language that, you know, of the people that you're staying in. But, and my travel companion was exactly like that and refused to even learn to say please or thank you in Spanish. And that just did my head in, amongst other things. But
yeah, I think that's just rude. I mean,
it is.
We expect people who come to our country to speak a little English.
And that's so exactly what I said to her. I was like, you know, like, she had a really, really thick New Zealand accent as well. So I'm like, it's not helping that your accent is so strong. But mine probably is too. Like, you know, I'm just, obviously you don't notice your own accent, but like, yeah, refuse to even say please and thank you, or like slow down and at least repeat yourself slowly, because most people really want to understand you, obviously. Just like when someone would speak to you, you know, who's not a native English speaker and they try really hard to be understood and you try really hard to understand them. Yeah, she just wasn't like that. But I thought, I can spend the rest of my holiday tiptoeing around this person who is not someone I should be traveling with, or I can just bail and try and salvage this and have a good time. And that, so it was an accidental being alone traveling trip. And it was like, everything you've just said really resonates with me, like being able to get up when I want to get up, because I'm not a late riser. And I hate waiting around for people. and holidays like this one now, I'm in New Zealand now just for 9 days. Like, it's not a long trip, but I got really cheap flights and I was like, why not? And I asked a couple people like, hey, if you want to come, that'd be awesome. But if not, I'm going anyway. And it just didn't fit in with anyone's plans. And I was like secretly really pleased.
Yes.
And the only reason really I was asking anybody else is so that I could tell my husband, like, I really tried. Nobody else could come because he freaks out, you know. I'm like, I couldn't really go anywhere safer than New Zealand for starters. But yeah, exactly. So, and language obviously isn't going to be an issue. It's so nice, especially in a camper. I've never done a camper trip before. You just like having your home on your back, like that's awesome. Have you ever done anything like that? Have you ever done a camper trip? Do you like camping? Do you like to rough it? Or are you a bit of a luxury kind of lass?
Okay, so when I was young and my kids were young, I'd just pack up the car, drive, and that was fine. As I got a bit older, I like to stay in, like, boutique kind of places.
Yeah.
I don't know about camping because, you know, when you get old, I have to say, you get out of bed in the morning and you go, oh, I must have slept funny. I can't walk. It's kind of fall apart. So yeah. I don't know about roughing it anymore. I think I had my fair share of that when I was young.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah. And my dad and my stepmom were mad keen campers, like had the whole kit, you know, with they'd make like tent city palace. And even in the last probably 10 years before dad died, they were like, okay, we've done enough of that now. Like, I think we need to. They bought a camper van first just to try and be like, we're still camping. And then they're like, no, it needs to be hotels now. And I was like, I totally get it. It's fair enough. You've paid your dues. And also, like, you camp because it's cheap when you're younger too, because it's just easy to go bugger it. But if you can afford a bit more of a luxury holiday, no, not even luxury per se, but just, you know, like to not pay $10 a night to camp, then why not?
And I like to get an apartment, so I'll go somewhere for like 3 or 4 weeks and get an apartment, so you actually feel like you're experiencing what it's like to live in a place.
Yeah, totally.
I really enjoy that. Yeah,
and it's nice to kind of slower travel, like actually get to know somewhere for more than just a few days before you move on.
Yeah.
So what's your favorite place in the world? Everybody hates that question because it's so hard to answer.
I know, it's really hard to answer because I have a lot of favorites. I love France. That's my one of my return destinations. I like some parts of the United States, some parts I don't, but I'm a little bit adverse to actually going there at the moment.
Any particular reason or person?
I just don't really have any desire to go there at the moment, although my partner is actually there at the moment.
So. Oh, really?
Yeah, but he's from the States, so...
Oh, makes sense. Whereas Joel wants to go nowhere else except the US, never been, and I couldn't be less interested, so...
Well, the first, I hadn't been interested. Like, we kind of grew up, because Aussies, we grew up going, oh, no, we don't want to be anything like America, and we don't want to go there. But when I did eventually go, like, in my mid-40s, I went back like 7 or 8 times.
Yeah. And I guess because it's so huge and it's so different everywhere, right? Like, I've had a lot of friends go there thinking like, oh, I knew I'd have fun, but I wasn't really like super excited. Then come back and go, oh, my God, we're addicted. We love it. And specific areas particularly. Yeah.
So to answer your question, France. And I want to go back there again and again and again.
What is it about France? I didn't see much of France. I saw Paris. And then a little bit of the countryside. And I was really nonplussed by Paris. I think it's just because it was really probably just the trip I was on was a tour, which I haven't done since and wouldn't do again. But it was the, you know, I was still quite young and it was the first time I'd been to Europe, so that was just the cheapest way to see it and see everything I wanted to see. And now, since then, I've done totally self-planned trips, and I would happily do that again. But it was very sort of like, oh, shopping and oh, restaurants, and everything was overpriced, and there were so many places I would go back to again before that. But I feel like maybe I haven't given it a fair chance, or maybe not Paris particularly. Maybe, you know, the south of France is better, or
Yes, the south, the Sud de la France. I love the south of France. It's beautiful. But I also love Paris, but not the Paris that the tourists see.
Yeah.
Because you just see tourists. I mean, I remember, speaking of not learning a language, I was standing in, one morning I woke up, I was in Paris for about 3 weeks, and I woke up one morning and I thought, you know what, I want to go out to Versailles. I can't bother catching the train out. So I got on one of the apps and got a half price day tour thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh, this will be a new experience. I've never done a tour. This will be a new experience. So I'm standing there waiting for the bus, and this American couple behind me, and the woman said to me, oh, is this the bus that goes out to Versailles? And I turned around and said, yes, this bus goes to Versailles. She said, I can't understand you. I said, I'm speaking English. I having spent some time there and being able to speak the language and getting away from the tourist path, which you know, you've got to see once.
Yeah, totally. You've got to say you've done it.
It's a totally different experience.
Totally different. I need to go back and give it a second chance and get off the and have more than a couple of days and try. Fair enough. All right, France, I'll give you another chance.
From place to place.
That's it. And it's really hard. Like, I've spoken to a lot of friends about, because I know a lot of people who love Paris in particular, like as a city, and I've always been baffled, but then it's come down to a lot as well, like the mood you were in at the time, who you were with, how long you had to spend there, because there's definitely cities that I had an amazing time in, like Munich and stuff, because actually most things are food related. So if I ate really good meals, I'll remember that city and be like, that was great. That's what it comes down to for me. It really comes down to the experience. If you've only got a couple of days, it's probably pretty hard to capture the essence of a place. And I had been told by so many people that, oh, the French people are rude and they won't try and understand English. And I had no trouble with that. I didn't find that at all.
I've never found that.
Yeah. I don't think I've actually had that anywhere.
At least if you say hello.
Yeah.
Please and thank you in French, you know.
Yeah, exactly. I think people just want you to try. I think maybe I did notice that the French were, you know, not particularly fond of people who wouldn't even try to say please and thank you. And it's like, well, I definitely know people who are Australian that would do that to people who came and tried to speak another language at them. And, you know, like,
it was funny because I was actually talking to this young fellow. He was saying it's not that a lot of people in shops and that won't speak English. It's that if they're a bit older, they actually didn't learn English.
Yeah.
They can't.
Yeah, right.
So there's a bit of a misconception around that as well. Like,
you assume they all know English. Yeah.
You assume that they know English, but no, some of it. And of course, it's a second language.
That's it. It's like, and if you're a traveller anywhere, regardless, you should be making an effort. You know.
Yeah.
But I tried really hard in South America, and then I had this little 14-year-old kid say to me at a bus station selling chips. And I ordered them in Spanish. I didn't even try to say it in English. I said it in Spanish. And then he turns around. I didn't even know this kid spoke English, because most people I came across in South America didn't speak English. And he turned around to me and said, "Your Spanish is very bad." Like, fuck you, mate. I'm trying really hard. And I didn't know you spoke English. And just give me my chips, you little prat. But yeah, and apparently if you don't have the right accent, which is like that in so many places of the world, right, if you can't say it, even if you're trying to say it in the right accent, the nuance is so hard to detect for someone who's not a native speaker that, yeah, obviously I was making a really bad effort. I just, but he knew what I meant, so it can't have been that bad.
Well, it was funny. I was on a bus coming back from Rome, back to Paris, and we crossed the border, and the border guards got on, and they were checking everyone's passports. I handed him mine. He didn't even look inside of it. He just looked at it and said, "He said, oh, Australian," and smiled.
I've had people do that too before I've even opened my mouth, go, oh, you're Australian. I'm like, am I just giving off this vibe? Like, I don't understand. I guess it's not a bad thing. No one particularly hates Australians, so that's good. It's probably rather than people assume you're American or something else.
Yeah.
So what advice would you give to people who have never solo traveled before? Whether they be, I mean, look, maybe obviously women, but anybody, you know, who wants to do it but is maybe thinking it's too hard, it's too scary, what would you say to people like that?
Go somewhere that is, like you're doing now, like in New Zealand or somewhere close by where you speak the language, where it's easy to, you know, read the signs and you can order food and all that kind of thing first.
Yeah.
Like, so go somewhere that might be almost familiar to you first, and get that under your belt.
Yeah.
Some people also too, I mean, there's places that will do, if you are into tours and stuff, they'll get a whole lot of solo people together. Another way to do it.
That's a great idea.
If you're into the tour. Yeah, it is a really good idea. If you're feeling uncomfortable about, like, the planning stuff, like, so I'm a bit like you. I just rock up somewhere and go, oh, yep, that's what I'm doing now. I don't plan a lot ahead.
Yeah.
But if you're someone that's a little bit shy on the planning stuff, you don't necessarily have to go on tours, but you're like a travel agent or, you know, someone that knows a lot about travel can actually help you do a bit of the planning, so you don't feel like, you know, I'm rocking up to this place and I've got nothing, I don't know where I am and where I'm going.
Yeah.
And always book your first night accommodation.
Yes, I always do that too.
Yeah.
Me too. Yeah, and I think it's a really, like, even for, you know, people like us that have travelled before, and I'm sure you much more than me, but, like, there's a happy medium you need to find between not having a plan, if that's what you like leaving yourself open to figure things out, but also not getting there and then getting so stressed about not knowing what you're doing that you don't do anything as well.
Yeah, exactly.
And I struggle with that sometimes, going like, oh, it'll be fine. And then I get to a place and go, oh God, what am I going to do? I just want to actually just chill out and not do anything. It's like, don't do that. You didn't travel all the way here to not do anything. I don't know if it's just me that struggles with that, but I tend to do it a lot. And because I don't like being locked in, you know, I don't want to get somewhere. Joel is really against this because he's a planner and like a think of 50 reasons you shouldn't do something kind of guy. And I'm a fuck it, we'll figure it out later. Say yes, work it out later. That's my motto, you know. And so getting him to come to New Zealand the first time when we did, which was the first time we'd been overseas together in 11 years together. And,
wow.
Yeah. And we booked the first night and I really had to struggle to convince him, like, we can totally do this without planning anything other than our hire car, basically in our first night. Because I said, what if we get somewhere? I said, this is the worst thing, especially if you're on a tour. If you get somewhere and you really like it, but you've already booked to the next night, so you can't stay there any longer than one night or two nights or something.
Or vice versa.
Or vice versa.
You know, you go, what was I thinking?
Yeah, and I've had so many people, even Joel's dad has said this to us actually, and he's got somewhere, booked three nights or something at some hotel, and then even just driving like up to see us, they live down south, and getting to the hotel and finding out the hotel is totally crap and it's nothing like he expected, but he's paid for three nights already. It's like
nothing like the Instagram photo.
Yeah, exactly. He's like, I looked online and they had none of this. And that actually happened to us when we did book a hotel in Dunedin, and it said free Wi-Fi in all the rooms, and we got there and they're like, oh yeah, the Wi-Fi is being installed next week. Like, well, that doesn't help us now, does it? They're like, oh, sorry about that. We'll give you a free drink. I'm like, a free drink doesn't update my Facebook status, mate. Or get me, or get any work done, you know. So that's it. You kind of got to be prepared to have, what I've tried to do for this trip, even though not very successfully, is just have an idea of things I wouldn't mind seeing, but not having anything that's a deal breaker. Just like, it'd be great if I get to see that, but if I don't, that's cool too. So you at least have some things you want to do, I guess. But yeah, I think everybody's a little bit different about that. Like, I've got friends that literally plan everything down to the minute and hate not having stuff booked and planned. And I'm like, oh God, I don't want to travel like that. But each to their own, I guess. But
yeah, that's exactly right. So whatever fits your particular style, you know, there's something out there for everyone.
Yeah, that's it. And like you said, sort of take it easy on yourself, like, with something that's not too challenging the first time you go. And I think people would be surprised how much confidence that gives you to be like, I can totally do this. After Europe, I was like, why did I book a tour? I can so do this. But I probably needed that trip to say, now I've seen, you know, like 18 cities or however many cities it was. Now I know which ones I want to go back and see more of and which ones I don't. But yeah.
That's right.
And it's not hard, and you get to go to a bunch of places where you don't speak the language, and like, I think I find that interesting too. Like playing around trying to speak a bunch of different languages inside a month and not being particularly good at any of them, as it turns out. But it's still good fun. If you don't mind making a dick of yourself, I guess, if you've got a lot of pride. All right, so I along the same lines, but so that was advice for travellers, but advice for people who would really love to either write about travel, or maybe more so from the photography side of things, or even just do something entrepreneurial, what advice would you have for people who are interested in travel but would really love to turn that into something else, who just don't know where to start? You know, there's a lot of white noise online in that space.
Okay, so have a clear business plan.
Yep.
Set up, like, who's going to be your niche market? What is it you actually want to achieve out of this? How are you going to make some money? Like, it's not, I mean, there's a lot of people out there that go, you know, make $1 million out of travel blogging. Mm. And that's not the case. You know, a lot of us have full-time jobs as well, or part-time jobs.
Yeah.
Especially in the first few years. But yeah, having a clear goal, a marketing plan, a business plan in place, it's vital. And even like, what will your business look like? Is it a niche part of that marketplace?
Yeah.
I see so many people just copying what other people do.
Yeah.
And you know, that's okay when you first begin, but yeah, it's not going to suit you in the long term in terms of a business.
Yeah.
So keeping that business hat on all the time. When you're posting something, why am I posting this? Mm. You know, is it driving traffic to my website? You know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Is the stuff that is difficult to learn?
Yeah, I think so too. Especially if you're not business minded necessarily, it's probably not something that would naturally occur to you. And there's nothing wrong with having a hobby blog, I guess, and go nuts. But yeah, if you want to turn it into an income, you've got to have a bit of an idea how you're going to do that.
Yeah, and I mean, if you want to do it as a hobby, that's fine too. But remember, it's going to cost you money.
Yeah, exactly.
A lot of money if it's a hobby. So.
Yeah, that's it. Totally. I wanted to ask you more as well about, like, more on that sort of entrepreneurial and business and career side of things. You know, on your website as well, you sort of say that you've never been afraid of trying new things, and you've worked in really male-dominated industries. Would you tell us a little bit more about that, and why you think that your attitude is like that? Did you grow up with parents who sort of taught you to take risks, to try new things? Is it just ingrained? Is it just your nature? Especially in, particularly maybe in male-dominated industries, how do you find that?
Yeah, so I was really lucky. I broke the glass ceiling in some really male-dominated industries, like in the trade and stuff. So I don't know how I got there. Maybe it just kind of didn't happen in terms of getting there. And I still look back and go, wow, that's pretty. You know, I'm pretty proud of myself. That was a fairly major achievement.
Yeah.
In terms of that, my mum and my grandmother were very, very strong women.
Mm-hmm.
my grandmother actually was the, she was one of the founding members of the Union of Australian Women.
Oh, wow.
And she won a, they studied her in feminist studies.
Wow.
She won a, an Order of Australia medal for the work that she did for, women's causes and stuff.
Wow.
And then my mother brought us up on her own.
Yeah.
So she was off to work, you know, she had good jobs and stuff like that. So we kind of, we took risks because we didn't know any different because we basically were latchkeys. So, you know, the women that went out to work, there was, they were the breadwinners. We didn't have, anyone to come home to after school. So, get into all sorts of trouble. But having those women, like really powerful women, as a role model, I think was really helpful.
Yeah, I think it's safe to say you had some pretty strong role models in that sense as far as female role models go then.
Yeah, absolutely. And I look back on it and I think, I remember it was, I was only really very young and my grandmother used to, when we were on school holidays, used to take us into the UAW and she'd be watching, films on women getting raped in the Vietnam War, watching this stuff.
Yeah.
And then Grandma said, can you go and buy me some stockings? And, I'm like 7 or 8 years old, just walking the streets of the city to get stockings for people. I get lots, So, yeah, I think my life has been an adventure because of that.
Yeah. And those kind of things probably make you, that when you grow up with thinking something's normal, then going and travelling on your own probably seems like, what? It's no big deal. That's nothing.
Exactly. When they used to find me at the police station or the bank getting fed lollies.
So I know in that sense then you're definitely not, you're a risk taker, like you fit in with our kind of ethos in that sense, but would you say, like I've already explained that I'm a kind of like, whatever, we'll figure it out. Would you say that you're more of a calculated risk taker or someone who just throws caution to the wind, fake it till you make it, is more of your motto?
Yeah. Muddling through, I call it.
Yeah.
And I think that's actually been my motto even in business.
Me too, definitely.
Not necessarily fake it till I make it, but like, and in some ways there's some calculated risk in business.
Mm.
But in life in general, no, it's definitely the science of muddling through. And I actually don't want it, have never wanted it to be any other way.
Mm.
My life journey has been amazing because I've had that kind of mindset, and I've gone on some interesting, not only travel journeys, but journeys in my life, met some, amazing people and that because of that. So,
yeah,
sometimes if it's business, it's more a calculated risk.
Mm.
But if it's in my personal life, it's definitely, it's all out for the journey, really.
Yeah, I'm exactly the same. I love that.
Yeah.
No ragging out anyone who's not like that. I have many friends who are nothing like that, but I'm exactly the same. It'll be fine.
Yeah,
it'll be great.
It takes all types of people,
That's right. Yeah, exactly. And if we didn't have those people around and those people in our lives that do actually kind of plan stuff before they do it, then we need them for some things.
One of my friends also says, every time I go and make a plan, you break it. because that's your plan.
Yeah, that's it. Exactly. Yeah, I hate being tied into plans as well, but like my best friend is a PhD doctor and she's the one who'll plan down everything to the exact minute and I'm like, we could never travel together, man, because I drive you nuts and you drive me nuts and we both just wouldn't have a good time. But if we're drinking a bottle of wine or two together, it's a great time. All right, so we've got to wrap it up shortly. So I guess my final question is a bit of a philosophical one, and it's particularly poignant given the title of your blog. But if you could give your younger self some advice, maybe even like your 15 or even 20-year-old self advice, what would it be?
Oh, that's a really interesting question. And not something that I hear a lot of people go, if I had my time over, I would just say, Jules, just go for it.
Yeah.
And I would also say, don't worry about what the future holds, because if you worry about it, then you're going to stifle yourself.
Yeah.
And because whatever journey you take, whether it be the right road or the wrong road you take, you learn and you get to experience amazing things. So yeah, I guess that would be what I tell my, and not drink so much when you're young, because you feel it when you're older.
that's funny. But yeah, I know, I really love that. I love that. And I think as well, probably given the upbringing that you had and the way that you have lived your life anyway, you were already doing that, but maybe you used to worry about it a little bit more than you would now. And as if our 15-year-old selves would listen to us anyway. Yeah, whatever, Mum. Well, that's great. Thank you so much for taking the time to sit down and do this podcast with us. It's really exciting, and we're so happy to have you on behalf of Cherie as well, who's very jealous that she can't be on the phone with us. And hopefully we'll be in touch soon. And listeners, we have a really exciting competition coming up, which when Maggie gets around to it and pulls her finger out, will be up online. So you can hear all about that soon. So thank you so much for being with us.